You're listening to the Envious Alien Podcast with your host, Heather Woodward, an award-winning psychic, supernatural author, and lover of all things true crime. On this show, we're going to deep dive into topics that don't usually see the light of day. The spooky, the weird, the macabre, the paranormal, and of course, aliens. Sit back, grab a cup of tea, and let's get on with the show.
I am J. Allen Cross. I am a practicing witch, writer, and author. So I specialize in folk magic, particularly from the American Southwest, but also a little bit all over kind of the North American range is what I love to delve into, is this idea of folk magic and what the people have done with it over the years. So that's my specialty. I write books on that as well. I am also an avid paranormal investigator. I work on a paranormal investigation team out of the Portland, Oregon area, where I serve as one of the psychic mediums on the team, as well as a cult specialist.
As an occult specialist, like, what do you do with paranormal investigating?
So having somebody who's familiar with the occult is really helpful on a paranormal investigation team, because a great deal of hauntings, particularly nowadays, are started by people dabbling in the occult and not really having an understanding of what they're doing. That'll get you haunted pretty quickly. So having someone around who can recognize the signs, talk through with the clients as they've been doing and have an understanding of that tends to be very important. And depending on team to team, your occult specialist may be of a different variety. So sometimes occult specialists are people who are like really excellent at historical things and symbols and things like that, whereas other people are more practical, where it's they're actually practicing witches or other occult practitioners as well. So they have that sort of experience that they can utilize. Depending on team to team, your occult specialist will have a slightly different bent. Since I am a practicing witch, I can bring in things like spellcraft and also recognize things like ritual remains and those types of things as well, which is very helpful in a paranormal setting.
Your book, The Witch's Guide to the Paranormal, How to Investigate, Communicate, and Clear Spirits. I was really intrigued by this book because when I saw it come out, I've been following it for a little while here, and then I decided that, I got to read it. It's interesting because it brings together witchcraft and the paranormal and the psychic stuff. You do all that, so it makes sense now. But more than that, it's these days, especially since 2007 when Ghost Hunters came about, we have to have gadgets kind of paranormal investigating. It's very technical,
yeah,
which I find to be very tedious. Yes, I love gadgets and stuff. However, when you go back into the history of paranormal investigating, like psychic research societies and stuff like that, it was all this, what you have in this book.
Yes, we're going back to the old school.
I was very intrigued by that because I'm like, look, we're going back to what it used to be. And I want to know, just how do people feel about the book in the community?
It really depends, because the community is very much divided on this idea of paranormal investigation. And it's so funny because in my brain, it's so clear that we need one another. However, you have paranormal investigators themselves tend to be very leery of anything woo or too spiritual. And I find a shocking amount of paranormal investigators really don't believe or will go out of their way to discount any sort of evidence or anything like that. There tends to be this very sort of close-minded attitude towards the paranormal, supernatural, kind of witchy things from the paranormal investigation community. And yet on the flip side, witches tend to be very close-minded about paranormal investigation. And a lot of them that I speak to have this very warped sense of what paranormal investigation is because of television. A lot of witches are very anti-paranormal investigation, but it's because their only exposure to it has been these like Zach Bagans types that are like going into these old hospitals and trying to fight the ghosts. And so they have this very odd sense of what the work is. I feel very much that one of the reasons or one of my purposes here is to take two worlds that don't want to go together and create bridges between them, because I could see how much we need one another and how much we have to offer and what we can accomplish when we mix together. So far, the response has been a little tentative, but those who have gotten a hold of the book are like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have had this before. So it's, we're having a very positive response to it, but it's something that a lot of people are a little wary of at first. But I like that because I want to be like, come with me. We're going to go do a spooky thing. It's going to be okay. And I think it's going very well.
I think that's really cool. You made a really good point about how there is this camp on TV and it's very, I'm just going to say it's stupid. It's stupid. There is the Zach Baggins of the community. There's a lot of them and either have, I'm old school, so you either have like ghost hunters or you have paranormal estate. It's either technical or it's a demon. There's like no in between. I was just watching the Shock Docs on Discovery Channel, don't judge, but there was one in particular about the Lizzie Borden house and they went into the woods. They're like, oh my God, there's a portal. And I was like, are you going to do something about that or are we just going to talk about it?
Always my question too. I'm like, okay, but are we going to do something about it here or are we just going to be like, yep, that's a thing, bye.
Exactly. And then they're like, okay, the dark entity in the Lizzie Borden house must come from the portal. And I was like, okay, great, you found the problem. Like, can we do something about it? And instead, they just did a seance in the house. And I was like, that's not going to help anything. Great. Go you. You talk about portals in the book. And that's why I brought it up. Because you have some very knowledgeable things to say about portals and exorcisms. And not the way people interpret exorcisms. But just some very cool things. So let's talk about portals for a minute here. Because it's something we don't usually talk about with paranormal investigating. So what is your take on?
So portals are actually quite common in this type of work when you're dealing with a haunting. Particularly, you can tell when there's a portal involved, when the activity seems to be very inconsistent, very sporadic. The characters of the haunting are changing. That's going to clue you in onto the fact that you have a portal where things seem to be coming and going. That's going to let you know. And so portals, I can't really tell you so much like how they're made or what they are. I just know that I come across them and I've found ways to deal with them a little bit. In my experience, portals will be one of 3.5 varieties, we'll say. So like your standard portal is going to either point out of the house. So I call it like an exit portal, something that's going to go out of the haunted space, or one that points into the space, like an entry portal where things are arriving through into the space. So normally they'll go only one direction, but sometimes you do have ones that go both directions where things will both leave and enter through them. And these portals are transportation for spirits a little bit. We have something called a spirit highway, which is a little bit different, but these are essentially a way for a spirit to pop through one area and then pop out somewhere else. Now, where is that other place? I'm not sure always. But it does seem to be mostly a transportation type situation. And so what's important to do, and where a lot of people run into trouble, is that they'll go and they'll cleanse a house and they'll cleanse it and they'll cleanse it and they'll cleanse it and they'll come back like every week and they'll cleanse it again. And it still remains haunted because often either A, they've misidentified the haunting and are attempting to clear it in a way that does not match up with that haunting, which I can talk about that in a minute, but or most commonly is there's a portal there. So there's this big open door where stuff is coming and going. And so you can cleanse until you're blue in the face, but there's still this big open door that things are coming in and out of. So in the book, we talk about ways to close portals or change their direction as well. So if you have a portal that's pouring into the home, you can change it so that it's flipped around the other direction and is now an exit portal, which can actually be very helpful because they don't tend to dump activity into the home. And they serve as a great escape route for any sort of entities or energy that you don't want in the home. It has a very clear exit. So I like to work with those when I can. And then you can close them up when you're done. And that's stuff that we talk about in the book. So we have those 3 main types. I say there's kind of like 3.5 types because I have ran into something else that's not quite a portal. And it's the only thing that I actually tend to pick up with my physical eyes. Normally, if I'm seeing something like psychically, it's in my head. But this is something that I see with my physical eyes. And that is a thin spot or a tear in what we call the veil that kind of separates us from them. And to me, it looks like kind of like a haze. Like maybe someone has kind of put like scotch tape over like a camera lens or something, or someone's taken like a really steamy shower and there's kind of like this haze going on. And that's not necessarily a portal because it's not like a designated opening as much as it is just like an oopsie area. And especially around Halloween too, I sometimes have difficulty because the whole place will look like that for a couple of days. This portal is in a nutshell, and we talk about those in the book as well and how to work with them.
It was very cool that you talk about it because not a lot of people talk about Portal and the fissures that you're talking about in the, or the tears. Those are very interesting when you come upon them because people think that hauntings are just, it's a ghost, it's an entity or a demon and that's it. You got three choices. But you really clarify in the book that there are lots of things you could be encountering, including just crazy people. That's some of it too.
Yes, indeed.
You have a whole section on drama queens, and I was like, yeah.
It's very true, because a lot of people don't understand that when you do this work, it is, at the end of the day, a customer service job, which means that you do have to deal with the public and with people. And I did notice pretty early on in my career that you would run into the same types of people over and over again. And I don't mean to put anybody in a box, but when you begin to see a pattern, and I know that anyone who picks up my book and begins to do this work as well is likely to see that pattern as well, if I can shed some helpful insight into that a little bit, I think that will be a good resource for people. Because, so for instance, one of the ones that I write about, you talk about like the drama queen, and the other one that really trips people up is the family skeptic. You'll sit down with a family where everyone's like, yep, this is a thing. And usually it's the oldest male in the home, not always, but usually there's the one person in the house that's like, I don't believe in any of this, and I think that you're a con artist. And that can be very jarring for somebody to who's there to help to be faced with. And a lot of times people will shrink up or become very confrontational with them. But I found in my experience that these people who are, quote unquote, the family skeptic, and they usually identify themselves as that, have actually experienced as much, if not more, activity than everyone else in the home. And once we get them to feel safe and open up about that, we can get them onto our side and they don't have to feel like they're letting everybody down or going off with the fairies with everybody else. So knowing what to do when we are faced with different types of people, whether they're overdramatic or maybe they want the haunting there, or maybe they're skeptical of you, knowing how to work with other humans, living human, is something that a lot of people don't prepare themselves for going into this, but it's still very important.
Yeah, very much of paranormal investigating, especially if you're doing houses or anything like that, is definitely working with people and working with the trauma of people too, because a lot of times you'll go into these houses and you'll find that if you have a poltergeist, yes, there's going to be something crazy happening in the house that's creating the poltergeist.
Yep.
There's going to be some kind of trauma or drama. And you really focus on that in the book about how to really deal with these kinds of people and how to set yourself up for it, which I think is really good because I've read a lot of paranormal books and usually people don't talk about that. Usually people are like, get yourself an EMF detector and a video camera. And something to do EVPs with. And there you go. You're good.
And then go into strangers' houses.
Exactly. And I don't know how many paranormal groups I've seen that get tripped up over those Febreze things that you plug into the wall that make those noises. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Those are like a lot of ghosts I hear. Or when I hear EVPs of, I'm like, oh, like one of those things that people think they're real.
It's so true. It's so true.
Oh my God. This is anecdotal, but I had a person who said, oh my God, there's this demon in this house. And they had EVPs of that thing, that sound. And I was like, did the house smell really good? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, go check their walls. Okay. Go check the wall things. They have those Febreze things. And he's, oh my God, are you kidding me right now? Did I just get spoofed? And I'm like, you did. I'm sorry. You did. It turns out they had a electrical leak. And those things. And that was the demon.
Love.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Because if you have an electric leak in the wall, it makes people hallucinate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, like, your EMF detectors are not just for ghosts. Therefore, checking to see, like, about that stuff as well. Where are your high EMF areas? Because that will make people, high EMF will do all kinds of stuff. Will make people paranoid, make them hallucinate, like, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's known, and people don't realize that. And you covered a lot about, like, you did cover, that's the thing, the first part of the book is definitely about, here's the stuff that you need. But you went thoroughly into it and said, this is why you need those tools. So I got to ask, how do you feel as being like more of a, I would say an esoteric investigator or an occult investigator, how do you feel about all of these different types of gadgets that we have out there now, like the REM pods and the, you put millimeters in the book, but the ovulus and all these crazy gadgets, like, how do you feel about them?
I personally kind of love them, but also I think people tend to have the wrong idea about them, because I think it needs to be stated first and foremost that none of these pieces of equipment detect ghosts. Like, none of them are this foolproof meter that is going to tell you without a doubt, oh, there's a ghost standing over here. What all of these are is they are opportunities for interactions with spirit. And just because they go off, or just because there's a reading that comes up or anything like that, doesn't mean that there is without a doubt a ghost. And I think that's why a lot of people tend to really dislike the tech, because they go, because they're like, I don't believe that this EMF meter is going to tell me if there's a ghost standing there. And I'm like, you're right. Like, there is no way to say, yep, this is an EMF spike, there's a ghost there. But what it does is it creates opportunities for us to interact with spirit. And it gives us, like, they're like little gateways or like little portals where we can create these opportunities to interact. And without these, that becomes more difficult, particularly for people who are less psychically inclined or less sensitive. Having that communication or that interaction with the other side can be very difficult. And so when we bring technology in, it does create that, I guess I've said opportunity 72 times here, but it creates that opportunity that I don't think that we would have without it.
We also talk about Ouija boards, of course.
Oh, yes.
What's your feelings on the Ouija boards?
The Ouija board, like half in, half out of a couple of camps when it comes to Ouija boards. I don't think that the board itself is dangerous, but I'm not so far that I'm going to say there's no difference between a Ouija board and like a pendulum. Because there is a big difference. And a lot of that difference comes from like the lore and legend surrounding Ouija boards, the culture around Ouija boards, the beliefs around them, and the times where we tend to utilize them. So I've never been at a slumber party and had somebody bust out a pendulum, but I have been at slumber parties where someone's brought out a Ouija board, or been at like a Halloween party where a bunch of people are drunk and someone's like, I have a Ouija board, let's get out the Ouija board. So the culture and the method of use and the times that we find ourselves utilizing Ouija boards all intermix to create a little bit more of a risk than I think you would find with other things. And I talk about in the book as well, this idea of agreements, making agreements with entities is necessary for them to either interact with us or to try and harm us. And when we're working with a Ouija board, we can create agreements very quickly. And people think that agreements mean like this very formal kind of Faustian contract where you sign away XYZ. But it's actually, we give permission and create agreements through things like our beliefs or the things that we say. For instance, when we pull out a Ouija board, and we say, is there anyone here that would like to speak with us? That's a very wide invitation to just about anything that's within the vicinity. And then you ask it to move the pointer on the board, which is an agreement, another agreement. But depending on what your personal beliefs are, you're giving it permission to do different things. So some people believe that the spirit moves the pointer itself. In which case, you're making an agreement that the spirit is allowed to manipulate and move objects in the environment around you. Other people, though, believe that the Ouija board works because the spirit exerts some sort of an influence over us that causes us to move the pointer. And if that is your belief system, then by asking it to move the pointer, you are giving it permission to exert a certain amount of influence over you, if not perform a partial possession. So that becomes, it becomes very tricky very quickly. So I don't think that the board itself is the problem, because I do believe that if we were to approach things like pendulums or EVP sessions or things like that as haphazardly as people tend to approach Ouija boards, and with as much fear as Ouija boards tend to instill, because that's a part of it as well. People get freaked out by Ouija boards. And so that fear energy attracts things that feed on fear. And those things are often not friendly. And whereas you pull out a pendulum, no one's really freaked out, which is also another factor in it. I think that if Ouija boards are used properly, they can absolutely be safe. I just think that the issue is that a lot of people think they know how to utilize them safely, and they don't. And I also think that it's incorrect to say that pendulums and Ouija boards are the exact same thing, because there's certain things that aren't being taken into consideration when we say that as well.
It's interesting that you say pendulums and Ouija boards, because I've never heard that correlation, but I can see how people think it's the same thing.
Yeah, people point out like pendulums and they're like, oh yeah, there's no difference between like pendulums, Ouija boards, and tarot decks. And I'm like, have you ever tried to shuffle a stack of Ouija boards?
No, I have not.
These are very different. These are very different. They're not the exact same.
I always attribute Ouija to just any kind of ITC. I attribute it to spirit boxes. Like people just throw down a spirit box and they start talking to it. And I'm like, right. Maybe you might want to have some protection for that.
You didn't even visualize a little white light, nothing.
Or people use EMF the same way. They use the K2s for communication. And I'm like, ooh, cool. I do that too. But I'm a witch. I have a lot of like steps that I don't talk about that like in my head. I love that you put the agreements in here because I don't call them that. But yes, I do everything I do with intention. So if I'm using a K2 for communication, I'm definitely have the intention that it better just be using the machine and nothing else.
Yes.
We're not doing, the intention is the energy is going there. I will not be doing that. When I use a Ouija board, the same thing. My intention is the same as it is with automatic writing. You will be using the planchette and nothing else. If
right.
you try to touch me, I will drop it and you will be gone. There's definitely some territorial kind of intentions that happen, which I think is what you're talking about with agreements, correct?
Yeah, and having like specifics. Instead of being like, is there anything out there that wants to speak with us? Be like, are there any human spirits in this home right now that would like to communicate with us? Even just creating, even just having more specific wording and intention like you're talking about, really narrows that playing field as far as what you're inviting in, what you're allowing in, things like that. And so even just specifying what you're trying to contact is a huge help.
Makes perfect sense. And I think that's something that people don't recognize, is that intention is everything. I love the idea of the agreements. Again, I don't call them that, but it's the idea that you have a air quotes relationship with whatever is coming through, and you are definitely the more dominant energy. Therefore, you make the rules. I just looked up your other book. I didn't know that was you. The American, was it, what was it called? It's, I can never say it correctly.
It's American Brujeria.
Thank you. I was going to trash the pronunciation. So you have a lot of folklore in this book, I did notice. And you said in the beginning that's your gig. But you have smoke baths, salt baths. You have like your toolkit has like black candles, white candles, all kinds of stuff. You talk about witch bottles. There are some really cool things in here. How did you get to the place where you're applying those things to investigating? Because I never would have considered it, honestly.
Oh, really? So I grew up in a magical family. So I've been working with magic since I was probably like 11. And then the realizing I was psychic happened a few years before that. I've always worked in both worlds. So it just made sense. Like even from my very first case that I took, where there was a, what I call a negative entity present in this basement, it just made sense for me to leverage witchcraft skills with my paranormal investigation, just because it was what I had the tools for. It made sense in that same arena because it's all energy. These spirits, these entities are all made out of energy. And through witchcraft, I'm able to manipulate and move energy and either raise energy or banish energy or things like that, which means that I can do the same thing with certain spirit entities. So it made a lot of sense to combine the worlds for me. A lot of it, to be honest, is a lot of trial and error to see what works and what doesn't work and why certain things work and they don't work. Because I found that sometimes it's not necessarily the materials themselves, but it's how they're being used or what my state of being is like when I utilize them. For instance, in the cleansing area of the book, I talk about being aware of and shifting your own energy while you're doing the cleansing. Because I started realizing that anytime I would be like doing this like smoke cleansing of this home or whatever, if it wasn't working, it was because I was too uptight about it. But if I let go of that clenching knot in my stomach and the need to force whatever is in there out, if I could let go, then the rest of the room would let go as well. So it's kind of like change my energy, change the rest of it. A lot of it's been trial and error. I'm very lucky to have a very patient and understanding paranormal investigation team that's very open-minded. So if I pull out something weird on an investigation, I'm like, just go with me for a second. They're usually happy to do, which has really given me the time to try out a lot of things, see what works and see what doesn't. And then eventually culminated in this book of, okay, I did all the trial and error for you and found out what works and what doesn't. So I bring that forth.
That makes a lot of sense. The only thing that I've ever used witchcraft with is I sometimes want to do house cleanings or something like that. I tend not to use the paranormal stuff. I tend to use more of the witchcraft stuff, but that's, it's more spiritual than it is haunting. I'll make something like holy water or protection water or something like that and throw some rocks in there, get the holy water out and do the Psalm 23. But generally in an investigation, I never thought to pull out, you have the fiery wall of protection. I'm like, why have I never thought of using the fiery wall of protection in an investigation? Like the two just don't go together in my head. And so I was very, oh yeah. Like, why wouldn't I use black candles in some kind of clearing situation if I was doing something in a haunted location? Like, why did that not even, I don't know. Just some of the stuff I was reading in here, I was like, yeah, this is brilliant in a way. Because, duh.
Not alone in that. A lot of people I've come across were like, yeah, I do both, but I never thought to combine them. And I'm like, that's why I'm here. I'm here to help. I swear my job here on this earth is to be what I call a bridge person. I'm like, I'm here to help you connect them because they should be connected. And I think I'm really interested to see what people do like with this work. Because while I do want this to be a great guide for people that kind of shows them, I also know that there's so much room in this work for people to come up with their own methods and their own things now that they realize, oh, I can squash these two worlds together, to see what people come up with. I'm really interested.
The idea of using tarot cards in investigation really freaked people out. The Newkirks have made it a cool thing now with, you know, bringing tarot cards into investigations. People are more open to it with the whole Hellier thing and stuff like that. But even people now are like, how dare you? But I was like, oh yeah, girl, I was doing that way back in the day because like I'm primarily a psychic medium. And so, yeah, I'm going to use dowsing. I'm going to use my tarot cards again. I'm going to use automatic writing and stuff like that. But that was such a big thing. People used to freak out all the time. How dare you not use these other mechanical tools that right. I never even thought of bringing also witchcraft into that and bringing that into the fold, because a lot of resistance.
So a lot of times people, particularly from the paranormal investigation side of things, view, at least kind of classically, like you're saying, it's going away a little bit more now as people are getting more comfortable. But back in the day, pulling out something like tarot cards was like pulling out a Ouija board. Like, that's the thing that got us into this mess. So as people are getting more comfortable with it, I think that the kind of the stigma and the fear is falling away with it. And we're realizing that they're tools as well. The first time I ever actually saw anybody pull out tarot cards on a paranormal investigation was, I don't know if you remember, there was a show. She was the first one, like besides John Edwards, to have, I guess John Edwards was more of like a talk show. I think Lisa Williams was the first one to have like a reality TV show. Love Lisa Williams. She had a show called My Life Among the Dead. And she used to do like readings with people like who would come in, and she'd do them in her office, like one-on-one. But then she would also sometimes go to people's houses that were haunted, and she would speak to them, and she would do little rituals to help them cross over and things like that, which was very impactful for me as a young person in this work. But she, at one point, there was an episode where she did pull out a deck of tarot cards because she was having trouble making sense of what she was receiving. And so she pulled out a deck of tarot cards, threw down like four cards, and was like, oh, okay, now I understand, and then move forward. And I was like, that's brilliant. So I'm like 11 watching this, like, absolutely, that makes sense.
I remember the show you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And that did affect me as well. The way that she investigated affected me, actually, because it validated so much of what I was doing. I actually learned how to use equipment better than most of the people that knew how to use their equipment because I did the research. And I'm all, do you know where this comes from? Because you're doing it wrong. Because I actually read about it and I actually went back to the original ways that people do EVPs, and do you know about this? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay, shut up. Let me do my psychic thing now. It was a way to combat it, but never in my life did I think there would be a book like this where it's, yes, you can have it all. You can be a witch. You can do the paranormal. You can use the equipment and you can be psychic and you can do it all. And I think it's a really amazing way to investigate the tangible and the intangible. It's like the conscious and the unconscious. You're getting the best of both worlds, which I think you need with investigating, because it's like the human experience.
Absolutely.
you talk about a lot of different kinds of entities. There's elementals, there's fairies, and then you talk about egregores, and you talk about tulpas and servitors. How much of that do you come across when you investigate?
It depends on where I am sometimes. So as far as things like tulpas and this idea of thought forms, I find that a lot of, at least in my mind, how I define these are kind of like different levels. So like a thought form is more of kind of like a very small kind of spirit creature that's been made. That's, I often pick up on them as like little balls of smoke that are like zooming around and causing mischief. I run into those pretty commonly. But as far as something like a tulpa or like a fully created spirit based off of sustained belief and intention, I tend to find those in famously haunted places because that's honestly how you make them. So for instance, you'll sometimes go to an old saloon. There's things where there's a lot of lore that goes with it because that's how you create the spirit through this kind of sustained belief is it usually starts with a story. So you'll go to something like a old saloon and there will be this old story of Prospector Jim who, you know, like haunts the place and he comes from this place and blah, 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 and like this whole backstory. And you go to look up Prospector Jim and he never existed. Ever. It's just like a story that kind of started one day. But once you get enough people believing it, you'll eventually either create a spirit or you will create an identity for another spirit to assume, either because they are having an identity crisis themselves, which sometimes happens with spirits who don't remember who they were. And so they'll be like, oh, maybe this was me. And they'll just kind of like, I'm Prospector Jim. Or other times there will be maybe something that's a little more unfriendly that might be utilizing that as a guide. Or all of that energy and that sustained intention and belief will create a whole new spirit. And you'll notice that because sometimes the story will change and then the haunting will change. So maybe over the years, it works into the fact that Dr. Jim had a peg leg or something like that. And then the apparitions or the activity, people will either see him with a peg leg suddenly, or there will be like the sound of a peg leg walking across the floor or whatever. So it will change with the belief, which is a very interesting phenomenon to see. It's common in certain circumstances, but it's not something I would say that I run into on every investigation by any means.
I don't think people realize how much we as investigators affect the haunting. Do you find that you infiltrate your own EVP sometimes?
Not so much with the EVP because I don't seem to do it very often, but I have noticed that sometimes too, depending on who I'm investigating with, that the activity will change depending on kind of like who is present. So I do think that there is part of that at work. And I have heard of people who are like the ones that are, it's always that one person that like always gets great EVPs or whatever. And you're like, is it you though? Or is it the spirit? Because people don't realize that we can create the activity ourselves.
Yeah. Do you find that people get really great AVPs are usually great projectors?
Sometimes.
Yeah, because I have noticed that. So what would you say to people that are worried about that? Worried of contaminating their own investigations? Like, since you work with energy a lot and you work with witchcraft a lot, how would you tell people to keep their energy neutral, to maybe, I don't know, cloak it? Is that what you would do? Or how would you keep it so that you're a neutral force in the energy?
I love that you're using the term like keeping your energy neutral, because I think that's really what it comes down to. When we're going to influence something, and this is something as well that I talk about with like pendulum dowsing and things like that too, whereas if you're utilizing a pendulum and you're sitting there thinking, say yes, it's going to say yes. And similarly, if you're doing like an EVP and you're going like, ooh, I really want this to come through, or like I want this kind of thing to come down on, if you're really focusing on it and you're really tied to the outcome of it, that's when I think we're going to have a higher instance of us projecting our own energy onto it. So I think that it's important to really release expectation, release any sort of hope or desire. And we can be excited about it, but I think it's important to just let go of the outcome a lot. And if you're finding, if you're really worried about it, somebody told me about this once with utilizing a pendulum that I've found to be helpful, that you might be able to also move over to an EVP where it's okay, after you ask your question, have something else ready to picture in your mind, something like a beautiful beach somewhere, the image of your pet or something like that. Just something that you can be like, here's my question. And now I'm going to take myself out of the equation real quick while something else answers. That can be very helpful to, like you said, neutralize our presence there without being attached to what might come out. And I think that's where we end up having a lot of problems.
Yes, it's, I agree with you 100%. And I don't think we take that into account sometimes, especially, oh my gosh, don't even get me started on Zach Baggins. Oh my God, I have a thing with that. They just go in with this like, feral kind of, I don't know, thing. And you're like, bro, come on, chill. I know you're an Aries, but calm the fuck down. Man, if you're going to be aggressive like that, you're going to have stupid experiences.
It makes sense that he's an Aries. They give us a bad name, but yes, it is.
You're an Aries too.
I am, but I have really intense Virgo placements, which basically just makes me a Taurus.
I would not clock you as an Aries. That is so funny. You're so calm.
Most of the time.
Where's your Virgo? Is it in Moon?
So I have an Aries sun, and both my Moon and Rising are in Virgo, as well as like a bunch of other crap. I have really intense Virgo placements.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. What is it with Aries energy and the paranormal? I want to know. You would think it would be Scorpio, but it's not. A lot of investigators I know have fire placement, not water placement, which throws me off.
I think it's because we're brave. And I think to Aries especially, we're more likely to charge into something without thinking about it so much. So they're like, hey, there's like potentially a demon in this house. And we're like, awesome, I'll be right back. Like we're inside before we can get freaked out by it. So I think that's very helpful for us.
Okay, that makes sense. The curiosity of it all. Okay. Yeah, that does make sense. I'm a Pisces and my rising is Sag and my Moon is an Aries. Totally fully feel you when you say, you just jump right in and you think about it later.
Right. Later, you're like, maybe that was not the safest thing for me to do, but I'm still alive, so it's fine.
That's totally how I think about it too. People are like, why are you doing that? I'm like, what did I do? Oh, damn, did I do that? Okay. It wasn't the best idea. But in the time, like, it felt really good.
Exactly.
Yeah. And maybe too, because of that Aries energy, you are more inclined to use things that most people wouldn't use because you're like, fuck it, I don't care what people think.
Exactly.
You're like, I'm just going to do it the way I want to do it. So there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So as we're ending, I want you to tell me like the most scariest or the most profound experience that you've had doing this kind of work, like the story that like made it all happen for you.
Gosh, there are so many.
Maybe the one that changed you or the one that like really solidified the paranormal for you.
There have been a couple. I'll tell you two short ones that really got me and really not only like this is real, but also helped me embrace, especially like human spirits on the other side as being people. And because we get so comfortable with them being ghosts that we forget that they're first and foremost people. They simply just don't have bodies. And so I was working this case at this very rural homestead. It was like a multi-generational home, like to the point like these people's family had settled this land and lived in that house all the way up until like now. Like it was an old homestead that I was working on. And they had a spirit of a man there. And I'm not sure there's a graceful way to talk about it, but he was, I believe the term we would use now, intellectually disabled spirit of a man. And he was giving them some trouble because he didn't like the new baby that was in residence there. It was very noisy. It was bothering him. And so there had been some upsetting activity that they were really worried about, but it was a little bit of a misunderstanding. And so I was there with another psychic from our team, and we have opened the light because that's something that we do. And that's something I teach you to do in the book so that he can cross over. But a lot of spirits are very nervous about doing that. And so something that we like to do is we like to ask them, okay, is there somebody on the other side that you would like to have come back through and escort you and help you cross over? And usually people are like, oh yeah, my grandma or my late husband or whoever it is. So we asked this, we're like, okay, who's on the other side that you love and that you trust that you would like to have come back through and take you to the other side? And both me and this other psychic, without talking to another, at the same time, get the exact same thing that he says, there was this dog. And we see this little black dog, both of us at the same time without telling one another. And we see this little black dog come up into our heads. That's who he wants to see. And that was the first time that anyone had ever said an animal. And so it was this shock, but it was so beautiful. And so we asked for this little black dog to come through. And sure enough, it does, and goes through with this guy so that he can cross over. And that was something that was really like, it was such a deeply human moment for me that I felt that was really profound.
Aww.
And the other one too, there was this old mill in this like ghost town in Northeast Oregon, like population 6 people. It was an old mill that a friend of mine, their family owned it. And she was like, I think it's haunted, you should come out. And the whole place was weird. But the only spirit, like I could feel that there were spirits there, but the only one that I really clocked at first was this kind of old cowboy preacher type. And he was not friendly, and he was very powerful. He had very big energy. And I'm okay, dude, like whatever, like I'm just going to wander around. And I went upstairs to kind of like the second floor, like a hayloft looking thing. And again, one of those things that are later, you're like, maybe I should not have gone up those rickety wooden stairs that are 100 years old, because I definitely could have fallen through them, but I'm alive. So I headed up to see what was up there. And as I come to the top of the staircase and I can see over into the loft, I realized that there are all these spirits up there of people in this like Mennonite type clothing. And there's like a bunch of them that are like laying flat, like face down on the ground. And like other ones are like hiding behind stuff. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? And they're like, don't make us leave. Don't make us leave. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're like, he said that you're here to make us leave so that we have to hide from you because the light isn't safe or something like that. Come to find out, what I've stumbled across is a religious cult on the other side.
Oh.
This preacher guy has told them that if they cross over into the light, that bad things will happen and that they have to fear me because I'm going to make them go. And what he was doing was he was keeping them all stuck there. And it was very weird to come across that, where I'm like, wow, okay, this happens still, even on the other side. And you would think we're past all of that. But again, these are still humans that are on the other side. And so I was like, that was a big kind of light bulb moment for me as well.
Wow. Do you think that the preacher person was using their energy or something, or using them as batteries?
Yeah, I wondered about that. Yeah.
Ooh, gave me the chills when you talked about that one. Wow.
Yeah. Some spirits will collect other spirits, and that's a very unnerving thing when you come across it.
Yeah, it's like the, what do they call that, in the Rat King? Yeah, totally. Ooh, okay. So how did you deal with that? Did you ask them to cross over, or did you just leave it alone?
At that point, I wasn't in a place where I had like any tools with me at that point. And we were just going out there for a day trip. So I was not at all prepared to do like a big full anything. So I was just, hey, y'all don't want me to do that, so I won't. I'm just going to back out of here. And that was back at a time too, where I wasn't as equipped to deal with it as I am now too. This was quite a few years ago. So I was just kind of like, okay, like nobody panic. I'm backing out of here. You're safe. I'm just going to go. And we just moonwalked out of there.
Wow. That's incredible. That's very cool. So what do you have going on next? Do you have another book coming out? What are you doing these days?
I am writing quite a bit. We're going to see what comes out next. I do have maybe a couple of ideas for a couple more occult books. And like usual, I'm taking two worlds that really shouldn't go together and I'm doing that. So that's probably something I will continue to do for a while. I don't think this is going to be my last book for y'all. I am teaching, I don't know when this podcast is going to drop essentially, but I am teaching a few classes at the end of October, one through the Coffee and Cauldrons Pod Patreon. I'm doing another one through Sea Grape Apothecary, where you can actually attend in person in Portland if you want, or get a ticket to the recording. And I'm also doing another one through the Gathering of the Witches conference. Situation is a conference, is it a festival? something like that, where I'll be teaching paranormal mediumship.
Oh, very cool. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something like Bigfoot and alien abduction?
Maybe. That could
be all the same thing. I want to see that book, if that book does come out, because I want to see how that is going to work. But honestly, though, I think it's all the same energy. I never understood the segregation. The Bigfoot community does not talk to the UFO community, does not talk to the paranormal community. And I'm all like, why not? Because you guys are having a lot of the same experiences. And if you talk to each other, you probably could figure it out. But nobody wants to, like, I don't know. It's the same again with your book. It's like witches don't talk to paranormal people, like you said. And
yeah,
paranormal people don't talk to mediums, which I don't understand.
So. You would think you would want to work with one another. It's like when people do paranormal investigation without a medium. I'm like, that's like going to a foreign country without a translator. Like, it just makes sense.
It does. Don't you want somebody who knows how to go on the other side to tell you what's going on? It might help
right.
you. I don't know. But you need an ambassador. You need an ambassador.
Thank you for listening to the Envious Alien Podcast. For show notes, go to www.enviousalien.com. I always post links, videos, any kind of research materials that I used for the episode. So if you want to go a little more in depth, that's where you go. If you want more of the podcast and you like what we're doing, consider joining our Patreon. I post bloopers there. You get the episodes quicker than everybody else. They are ad-free. There's tarot readings and other bonus content that I throw out there. It's a great way to help us out. It pays for production costs, and it gives you more content. That's www.enviousalien.com. www.enviusalien.com. And as always, see you on the flip side.